You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
And as I said, 2008 has been nothing short of a big year for news, an energy crisis, a financial crisis, two wars, and a presidential election that never seemed to end. And it provided us media types with an endless supply of things to talk about. Well, here to help us separate the high and the low points of this historic year is Liz Winstead. She is the co-creator of The Daily Show, and these days she's producing and starring in a satirical internet morning show called Wake Up World. And I'm very pleased that she has joined me once again on the show. Hi,
I'm
Liz.
I'm thrilled to be here. Hi.
Do you see any standout event as defining 2008?
Well, I think the election would probably be the answer that most would give. I mean, we elected an African-American man who is my age. We have the same. He's 1 year older than me. He was born August 4th, 1961. I was born August 5th, 1961. And my dad has insisted that he knows I was conceived on election night. So my guess, and I said, Dad, how do you know that for sure? And he goes, I just know. And then that ended the conversation. So my guess is that Barack Obama, possibly same thing, celebrating.
Do you feel other connections? Or have you had a hard time kicking smoking?
You know, smoking to me, it's just, I have actually. We're very similar and in that regard. But I have had a problem kicking smoking this year. So I think a lot of people maybe would have pulled the lever for me had they known how similar I was to Barack Obama.
You could have run for vice president.
That's right. I have a pastor that was very controversial. You know, a lot of stuff going on. Yeah.
2008 is a year where many things that were supposed to be inevitable weren't, like Hillary Clinton being the Democratic presidential nominee or the defeat of Proposition 8 in California.
Or that gas prices were going to stay at $4 and we're just going to have to live with it. I mean, it is an emotional roller coaster. And, you know, it's so funny. What's good for the world is never good for comedy. And what's good for comedy is always sort of bad for the world. And so we've been living in a crazy time. I mean, the Hillary thing was one of those things where I think the media made her issue in. And then I think the media underestimated her war vote and what that meant to people and what that meant. Watching Bill implode on the campaign trail, to me, was one of the comedic high points because I watched Bill Clinton. My father retired, and I know when my father retired and he didn't know what to do with himself anymore, he was sort of wandering around the neighborhood, knocking on people's doors, saying things that were crazy, and my mother had to reel him in. And Bill Clinton was sort of that guy on a national, global scale, and that was really fun to watch.
Except that he was getting millions of dollars in speaking fees.
True. My dad was not. He was muscles being sent home by neighbors saying, you have a hole in your pants. Go home.
There is a problem in comedy sometimes because even though something is funny, it also might seem inappropriate to make fun of it. And a lot of people are talking about how difficult it is going to be with this new administration after years of being able to make fun of Dick Cheney and George Bush.
But I think, you know, I hear that a lot, and I always feel like people that say that are looking at Barack Obama, the black president. And I think that they think that somehow, because he's an African American, that's where you would mine your humor. And for me, that isn't where you mine your humor at all. For me, watching Obama and really paying attention to who he is, seeing that he is a centrist, watching progressives implode, somehow they heard some promise that I never heard from Obama. And so when I saw him pick his cabinet, I was like, of course he's going to pick moderates. The thing that I find sort of weird is when you are a centrist and you say you want to reach across the aisle, well, you have two aisles. You have one on the right and you have one on the left, and he keeps reaching to the right, forgetting that there is this seat on the left. Joe Biden's going to be great. Rahm Emanuel is going to be, you know, the pit bull in Prada, which is very exciting. So I think there's a lot of fun to be had with what's happening.
A lot of people got upset when Obama asked Rick Warren to give the opening prayer.
I was one of those people. I mean, I really, it's sort of shocking to me. If you want to have a diversity of faith on your stage, okay. And an atheist, I might add, because we do live in a country where some people actually don't believe in God. But when I look at that, I think, how many people do you suppose from Rick Warren's Saddleback Church, you know, maybe forewent financial things to give money to Obama or took of their time to, you know, make phone calls, phone bank, knock on doors? My guess is zero. So to reward him with being the first voice we hear at such a historic inauguration is a little bit crazy. The fun thing that's been, too, is the Obama plate that's on every 5 minutes when you watch cable TV. The gold coin, be part of history. Our show actually did a Joe Biden plate because we felt that he was left out of, because he is in the shadows of history.
It is wild, all this memorabilia that's being sold. The New York Times runs a regular circular, you know, a special pullout section that is full of Obama memorabilia.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, it is historic, and we'll see what happens. And so, yeah, it is kind of gobsmacking to see that. And, of course, choosing Hillary as his, you know, Secretary of State nominee when certainly on the campaign trail we heard that she has no experience at all in the dive bombing of the fake bombs in Bosnia and all the other things. The 3 a.m. call that she, apparently Bill said she couldn't stay up that late because she's 60 and she's in bed by 11. So, you know, that's going to be interesting. I also think, to the Bush administration will be the gift that keeps on giving for satirists, for sure, going into 2009. We're going to be dealing with a new administration, and then we're going to be dealing with all the books and the residual stuff. I mean, when you look at, you know, George Tenet, you know, in the pool with the, you know, at the Saudi pool with Prince Bandar screaming racial epithets about the neoconservatives, you know, you just can't write that stuff. It's really great.
Well, we're also going to have the sniping continue. Today I read in the paper that that Laura Bush and Condoleezza Rice said that history will judge this administration a lot better. And we've had Dick Cheney sniping at Joe Biden, Joe Biden sniping at Dick Cheney. We do know that it's unlikely that Joe Biden will be shooting anyone in the face. On the other hand, he may very well be plagiarizing somebody's speech down the line. And we never got that from Dick Cheney because Dick Cheney hardly ever spoke to anybody.
No, I don't think there was a lot of meetings in the bunker. I mean, Dick Cheney is just going out, kicking and screaming, providing comedy on his way out the door. He will be retired, saying things. I mean, he said today he does not understand why he is so disregarded and that he never looks at polls, which, you know, I understand on the one hand, never looking at polls. On the other hand, if you don't look at polls, how do you know what the people who elected you would like you to be doing? It, you know, it's just more of the cavernous Dick Cheney, you know, in the bunker mentality that I, for one, will miss comedically but won't be sorry to go as a citizen.
My guest is Liz Winstead, whose latest venture is a television show on the internet called Wake Up World. And you can get it on www.wakeupworld.tv.
Yes, it's true. And we do it live in New York. We did it for about a year and a half every Monday night here in the city at the Green Room. And then we've tapered it down, the live shows, and we're doing mostly a web series. We're going to do it in New York probably every 6 weeks. And we're taking it down to the inauguration. The weekend before the inauguration, we'll be doing it live in D.C. at the Arlington Cinema and Draft House. So that's going to be really fun.
So it's kind of like the Today Show without the cooks and stuff?
With the cooks, the whole bit. So, yeah, it's basically, when you look at how Jon Stewart takes on evening news and Stephen Colbert sort of takes on the bloviating punditry, you know, the third sort of media target that nobody had taken on were the morning shows. And there's 23 hours of morning television if you count The View. And, you know, so the flapping of the gums and the lack of information and the product placement is really fun to satirize. And the stretching for, you know, something to talk about. When your morning show is 4 hours long and it's going into the afternoon and you've run out of things to say, you do end up with segments like, you know, what jewelry will make your butt look small? And it's literally, I've watched that on a show thinking, that's 3.5 minutes I'll never get back. And they give the same priority to that and to the war.
Yeah, I know. That, it always amazes me. They'll have some movie star on for 3.5 minutes, and then they'll have the Secretary of State on for 3.5 minutes.
And the pregnant man. You know, it's crazy.
Well, where are you going for your news these days now that so many newspapers are either shrinking in size or closing up altogether?
I know. It's very – well, I get – I subscribe to newspapers. And I read my news online, but I subscribe to 3 different newspapers because I just want to keep them in business. But I go on the web. I go to aggregate places. I go to, you know, I go to Open Left. I'll go to the Washington Post and the New York Times. And I listen to radio. I listen to podcasts a lot. And so I go all sorts of places.
So when you hear a news report, how do you know whether this is something that will lead to a good punchline?
Well, I follow what I've realized is that most people who are just a general in the world, living their lives, don't have a whole lot of time to scour the news like I do. So where do they get their news? They wake up in the morning. They might turn on the Today Show. They might turn on NPR. But they have a certain amount of information that I know they're getting in a short amount of time.
Or they're turning on their computer and looking, unfortunately, and not listening to NPR news. But they, a lot of people
yeah,
do,
Morning Joe,
God.
They'll listen to Joe Scarborough, they'll listen to, I mean, I was watching that show. If you've ever watched that show on MSNBC, it's a riot. The female host was just reading her BlackBerry on the air. They're literally talking about the bailout. And her she goes, oh, it's my daughter, and she wants me to pick up something that we have for. And I thought, why is this okay? Like, it's, I don't find it particularly cute. I find it shocking, actually. And so I follow what people are responding to. Because for me, with comedy, you're always responding. I can't really explain a story, and there's some really good gems that never make it into the bigger ether. And sometimes you just have to lose those comedically, because if you have to explain a joke, as they say, it's not worth telling.
On the other hand, there are big stories that just get ignored until you can't ignore them anymore. For example, the financial meltdown,
yeah.
which people should have predicted, and some actually did. They were ridiculed as Chicken Little types.
Oh, that's just crazy. And I do love the fact that Americans were just the angry. We became the angry villagers we deserve to be when you had, you know, Paulson saying, we've got to pass this in a day, and it's only 3 pages long, and it basically says this Al Haig doctrine, I'm in charge. And it's like, who are you? You know, Americans for the first time are finding out who Hank Paulson is, and at the same time they're finding out who he is, they're finding out that he's going to be in charge of $700 million.
Well, do you think that the hundreds of billions of dollars that are being spent to bail out the financial industry count as a high or a low point of the year?
I think a low point. I think that, you know, as that AP story revealed last week, when they called, you know, all of the places that received $1 billion or more, they got no clarity as to where the money had gone. Nobody knows where it is. I think that the bailout didn't really help. It doesn't seem like there's a whole lot going on. And I think people didn't realize that it's going to bankroll people. And now, who doesn't want a bailout? I'd like a bailout. How about you, Len?
I'd like one. What strikes me as interesting is George Bush seems to have disappeared, and Hank Paulson has come across as kind of the de facto president of the United States.
Well, that's exactly right. And, you know, Barack Obama keeps saying we only have one president at a time. And I'm like, yeah, well, the one that
Which one is
it? Still sitting around officially president is nowhere to be found. So you might as well step in.
So how would you spend the money if you were Hank Paulson?
Well, you know, people have asked me that a lot because of my doctorate economy from Oxford. Yeah, of course. I think I'd probably want to help out the people who are stuck with bad mortgages. I mean, it just feels like when you look at bailing out an auto industry, if people can't get credit to buy a car and you don't know which auto industry, even after a bailout, may fall apart, you don't know if you want to buy a Chrysler, if you don't know if Chrysler's going to be around, you're freaking out because you don't know if you're going to keep your job, so you don't want to buy anything because you're just trying to stay afloat. It seems that the people who need to spend the money to keep the economy going should get the money. I don't know how that works, but that's just my two cents.
Do you think that many people felt a little bit of schadenfreude about the collapse of major financial companies like Bear Stearns and Lehman Brothers?
I think so. I think, you know, I'm always astounded when, you know, I tell jokes for a living and kind of respond to the world. You know, when I just followed with my minimal knowledge of how trickle-down economics and supply-side economics and deregulation works, when it's explained to me, my little brain goes, well, that sounds like a scam. And so if I think that, you have to wonder what the calculated hand-wringing sort of Mr. Potter mentality is that goes on with that. And it's pretty, pretty crazy. I mean, I know I had to move all of my money from my savings into my checking.
Well, there was an awful lot of disconnect. For example, when the AIG executives went on a luxury retreat after the federal government bailed them out for billions of dollars.
Yeah.
And when the heads of the auto firms were invited to Washington, they all flew in their private jets.
Yes. Well, we did a little piece on our website, a little satirical piece responding called Save the Banks. And it's a very Sally Struthers kind of begging for money ad where it starts out with this female voice and you just see these shots of of the corporate executives of all these companies, and you hear the voiceover saying, tomorrow morning, a bank executive may wake up and not know where his bailout is coming from. And so you, the taxpayer, for the price of one iTunes download or 800 million other iTunes downloads, you can help a starving bank executive. So I think that you provide, if you're doing humor, you really are providing a service these days, because every time you do open the paper, it feels like if I don't laugh, I'll never stop crying. So that's kind of the intention, you know, on a personal level, and just on a bigger scale, it's like, how can I help you people through it? I can't fix it, but maybe we can laugh a little bit. Laughing doesn't cost anything.
Well, do you think that Al Franken, who has been known to make people laugh, is laughing these days?
Well, I am from Minnesota, born and raised. I just got back yesterday from my trip there, and that recount is just crazy, not to mention I think he's ahead by 26 votes at this point or something. The recount will end just by the first of the year. It looks like he may win, which means Norm Coleman will be the only person in history to have lost to a wrestler and a comedian. So that's not a great political epithet to go out with. And he's also become sort of the Ted Stevens of Minnesota with their FBI is investigating his donations and renovations, and there's all this crazy stuff going on. So it's been a good year for Minnesota. They've had the conventions there, and now they're giving it a shot again. Bless their hearts. They had a wrestler, and now they're going for a comedian, and you know what? I'm all for it.
Liz Winstead, well, yeah, it gives you hope for the future in case you decide you want to go into the Senate.
Oh, no. I have a lot of fun being a flamethrower. And you know what? If people dug up my past history, it would make Reverend Wright look like Mother Teresa. So I'm just staying out.
Well, we'll deal with that in the second part of our conversation. Right now, we're going to take a little break. My guest is Liz Winstead, who is a co-creator of The Daily Show, now the host and producer of a satirical internet morning show called Wake Up World.
Yes.
And we will continue our conversation after this. We're back with Liz Winstead. We're talking about the year 2008 in hopes that it's finally over.
No. You know what, though? So much could happen just today and tomorrow that it seems endless. You know, whoever thought that, the Illinois governor would be giving me a whole bunch of material right towards the end. That one is a mess.
Somebody who's on the show had a whole list of highs and lows of 2008, and they go side by side. One of them is The Daily Show, and on the other side is Elliot Spitzer. Another one is Hillary Clinton. The other side is Hillary Clinton, and he does the same thing with Facebook.
Well, see, this is what happens.
Facebook is both positive, and you know, I now have a Facebook.
I'm obsessed
whatever
with Facebook.
It is.
I know. I am so.
I don't even know what is it. A Facebook page?
You have a Facebook. You have a my book face page. Tell people that. You'll sound hip.
I'm still trying to figure out what the wall is.
The wall is
I'm up
where,
against the wall. That's all.
Well, I know, and you write something, and then 800 people. My latest ranting on Facebook, which I hope some of you can join in. I am a gigantic Scrabble. I'm obsessed. It's a good way. It's my avoidance tool to avoid writing, to avoid all things. The word spork is not in the Scrabble dictionary. Spork. It is a tangible product with which you can buy at the store. The spoon fork. The spork. Not in the dictionary. I got bumped out. I'm still ranting about it. So the people on Facebook, I posted that I'm annoyed that spork is not in the Scrabble dictionary.
And what has been the response?
20 people as angry as me. And then they also have to give you other words that are not in, like dough from The Simpsons, D-O-H, not in. It's maddening. Bling, not in.
What about Mr. Spork?
Mr. Spork?
Yeah, he's...
Spock.
Spock. See, I'm so on top of things.
Yeah, you know, you are with your face page, my Facebook page you got going, Len. But I think, you know, when you bring up Spitzer.
Yeah, I did.
And,
he's almost forgotten now. We have a new
governor. That's what I was going to say. It's so crazy that it was like, oh, yes, yeah, Spitzer. How could I forget that? And we had a lot of fun with that on our show. Because every time there is a crisis, these morning shows always have, how do you explain it to the kids? And so we did a How Do You Explain the Elliott Spitzer Scandal to the Kids segment. And we used math problems of, you know, if a 19-year-old hot prostitute is traveling on the local train from D.C., not the Acela, at this many miles an hour, how long will it take her to get to the governor and charge him the $5,000? So that was really fun. But that was crazy. And
were you surprised by all the attention she got? I mean, she suddenly her song became a hit. I think she's writing a book. I mean, she's a hooker.
I know. She's a hooker with a heart of gold. That one.
We know that for sure?
You know, no, we don't. But, you know, I just think anyone who vacations on the Jersey Shore has a heart of gold for some reason. I just think Bruce Springsteen has ingrained that into my head.
She loves the boss.
Yeah, she loves the boss. You know, it was
we
shocking.
We just don't know who the boss is.
I think Elliott Spitzer was the bigger shocker. Just like, really? He seemed kind of nerdy. Who knew that he had $5,000 to spend, and who knows what you get for $5,000? I think is where you can ask that question on your show, and then we have to leave it there, because I don't know.
This is a family show.
This is a family show.
But now, in the case of Elliott Spitzer, if you looked at him, it was not apparent. But if you looked at Rod Blagojevich, and I know he's going to disappear just as I stop fumbling on his name.
Just like Ahmadinejad.
Yeah.
Rostenkowski.
Milosevic.
Trigg. You know, the Palin children. Yeah, you get the kooky names down, and then they disappear out of the, relevance ether.
You think Sarah Palin's going to disappear for good?
Sarah Palin will never disappear. Yeah, that to me, when you talk about comedy gifts of 2008, I was sitting there, and I'm from Minnesota, and I'm sitting there in Minnesota watching the person who's going to be nominated and hoping it's not the governor of Minnesota, Tim Pawlenty, because the guy could not, like, he is like watching paint dry. And I thought, there is no comedy here. Please, God, let it be Mitt Romney. If there is a God and you want me to be able to make my mortgage payments this year, please have it be Mitt Romney. And then when it was Sarah Palin, I thought, oh my God, you've got to be kidding me. I can do the accent. She is
Tina Fey's whole career.
Tina Fey.
I mean,
I wonder what
she suddenly
was
has
thinking.
A hit show.
I know. Well, I know.
It was bombing.
I know. Can you? She was so brilliant, Tina Fey. And I just wonder what you're thinking when you are Tina Fey and you're watching TV and a woman steps foot on stage who's, you know, held elected office as the mayor of a town of 7,000 and then a governor for, you know, less than 2 years. And she's your doppelganger. And then she turns out to be just full of fun. Either she was thrilled or thought, oh my God, I thought I was going to only have one job this year. I wonder if she was just calling her agent immediately, demanding huge amounts of money.
A major career move, don't
yes.
you think? Yes. And it was interesting how she went, Sarah Palin, went from being a hero to so many people to an object of so much derision. I'm not sure whether it was the Katie Couric interview or something else that did it, but it was stunning what a quick turnaround there was.
But, you know, it's for those of us, again, who go, who the heck is Sarah Palin? And the first thing we did was dive onto the internet. And I found out so much about Sarah Palin in the first half hour. I found out her stance on gay marriage. I found out her, you know, that her church was didn't sound like a very tolerant church. I found out her experience. I found out what a snow machine was. You know, I found out a lot about Sarah Palin really quickly. While other people were embracing her, saying, isn't this refreshing? Isn't she pretty? I was doing research. And then it just took the nation a while to catch up. And what I really was happy about with Sarah Palin is that Sarah Palin revealed a lot about herself to people through her own words. It wasn't even us. I mean, the Saturday Night Live sketch was a transcript. They didn't write that. They were using her words. Yeah, I can see Russia from my house. You know, that kind of stuff. It's like, that's what she said. And so when she couldn't name what newspaper she read and, you know, she didn't really know which of John McCain's policies she was completely behind and which one she differed with him on, and she didn't know pretty much anything, that was all revealed and just lent itself to those of us who wanted to know a little bit more about her. I don't think that the ridicule was unjust. In fact, it's interesting. They've been playing this tape today of a song that was one of the candidates to head up the RNC had released and done on the Rush Limbaugh show. And I'm sure you've heard this about Barack the Magic Negro is the name of the song set to the tune of Puff the Magic Dragon. And it's God awful. It's racist. It's not funny. It's not satire. You know, I give anybody the right to say whatever they want, and then we all get the right to judge it. But in reading the comments in the blogs, and people are saying, oh, it's okay for the Democrats to critique Sarah Palin, but it's not okay for the Republicans to, you know, critique Barack Obama. But it's not critiquing Barack Obama's policies. It's basically taking a kid's song, a beloved kid's song, and making a whole bunch of racial slurs. So,
well, their point is that because he's black, he is given certain license and all sorts of expectations that he might not get otherwise. That's what Rush Limbaugh claims is going on, although all sorts of weird things have been happening on the right. Pat Boone claimed that did you see that? That people who were marching against the Proposition 8 vote were the same sort of people as the ones who bombed the hotel in Mumbai.
Yeah. Well, you know, again, the first question we have to ask is, who is giving Pat Boone a microphone? And then the second question we have to ask is, who is giving Pat Boone a microphone? So, I mean, stuff
someday
like that.
Someday I'll tell you my story about Pat Boone. Pat Boone and I used to talk on the phone almost every day.
No.
Yes.
About life?
About a gospel record that he had recorded that we were going to sell on television. I used to work for a company, Suffolk Marketing, that sold records on television. And we had a Pat Boone record that wound up bombing. But the great moment for me was when Pat called me and he said, Lenny, he used to call me Lenny, we got to cancel that shoot in my home on next Thursday because I forgot that's the day that we get together for the family Amway meeting. I thought, Pat Boone has an Amway meeting? Well, yes.
Yeah, again, the fact that you were shocked, Len, I gotta wonder about that. I gotta wonder about why you think. Here's me going, of course, Pat Boone had an Amway meeting. You stunned.
And he didn't want Debbie in the. He said Debbie wouldn't appear in the commercial because she was really upset with me because of that corporal punishment thing that happened when she was younger.
Yeah, you know, kids have a tendency to hold on to the strangest things. One of them being when your parents beat you, Pat. But have fun at that Amway meeting. I think that. Wait, now where were we? We were talking about something, and then I got off on crazy Pat Boone. Oh, the tape. You know, it's just, it's crazy that they can justify this and think it's funny.
Oh, the Barack Obama thing.
Yeah. But, you know, there's people.
But there's all sorts of wild things. Another Saturday Night Live person had her website claiming that Barack Obama was a communist. And there were a lot of ists and isms during this election, you know, socialism and communism. Although it wasn't a very good year for capitalism either.
No, it wasn't. But I'm sure that Barack Obama is a capitalist. If the ists, I'm sure that he is not a communist, nor am I sure that, yeah. So I know people say that a lot. And, you know, I think people throw a lot of words around like that a lot because they don't really understand the meaning of all of them. I think that people often compare people to Hitler constantly because they really don't have a working knowledge of any other dictators. You know, if they actually did, maybe they could be more nuanced and maybe
say Stalin or something.
Yeah, maybe someone's more like Duvalier. You know, little nuances. You never know, but you know, you don't hear people
right. Because he's the next Papadoc. Oh boy!
Oh
what
boy!
A
look out, people! I know that he is just like Somoza. You go down the list. Hello, but it's not smart people who call people Hitler. It's dumb people who are grasping at anything who don't have anything to back it up. Usually,
but the same phrases come up again and again. This year it was
change.
thrown under the bus.
Yeah.
There was Main Street, not Wall Street.
Yeah.
I was wondering, what about Elm Street?
I know. Well, I think we are on Elm Street, actually. I think Wall Street has become Elm Street, as in the nightmare on. I know all of it, you know, and it's people love to coin, like that Joe the Plumber thing. Oh, my God, Joe Sixpack. That was just unbelievable. Joe this pack, Joe that pack, Joe the this, Joe the that, Joe the Biden. You know, it was just insane.
The weirdest part is that Jeremiah Wright has kind of distanced himself from Barack Obama, and Joe the Plumber now has distanced himself from John McCain. He was disillusioned by the way he was treated.
Do you think that Reverend Wright distanced himself from Barack as much as Barack distanced himself from Reverend Wright?
Well, I think Barack distanced himself, and then Reverend Wright was hurt, and he said, "Well, to heck with you."
But he did have that interim weirdness at the National Press Club, where he was talking about Barack Obama. And that was bizarre. And I think that was the total nail in the coffin. Because first Barack Obama didn't quite disavow him and said, you know, he's been my pastor. I'm not going to throw him under the bus. And then when Reverend Wright went to the National Press Club and did his more crazy rantings about Barack Obama, I think Obama finally said, okay.
And he gave that speech, which I think was really one of the turning points in the campaign.
Yeah. I think it's so interesting because people kept saying that we don't know who Barack Obama is. That was sort of the overarching, we need to know more about him. And yet the media wasn't finding out who Barack Obama was. All they were doing is looking at Jeremiah Wright, who isn't Barack Obama, and, you know, Tony Rezko, who is not Barack Obama, and Michelle Obama, who is not Barack Obama.
But reading the New York Times ombudsman page, whatever the that article that they have, a lot of people complained that we didn't know who Barack Obama was, and then they complained that there was too much press
about Barack Obama,
attention to Barack Obama.
Right. Well, I think there's a lot of my biggest criticism of sort of corporate media is that there's a lot of wondering aloud that goes on. You know, you watch a Chris Matthews or you watch any of these sort of punditry shows that mask as maybe a newscast. And they will sit there and make their millions of dollars and ask the same questions you and I ask at home, like, well, why did that aide go to, you know, why did Goolsbee talk to Canada, you know, the person in Canada about NAFTA?
It sounds like the
IMA
show.
Yeah, and I was like, well, I don't know either, and you're supposed to tell me. There's supposed to be reporters and there's supposed to be researchers. And apparently, I think researching and reporting and investigative journalism was replaced by the graphics department at so many major news networks. You know, you've got swooshes that come in and a lot of breaking news. And I don't know exactly when breaking news stops being breaking news. Like breaking news, we found a body. Okay, well, then it's done breaking. And now you have the body, and nothing's going to change. So stop breaking. Breaking news, OJ's trial. You know that was another story this year. OJ is finally going to jail for something.
We also had another phrase that became very popular for a while. Team of rivals.
Team of rivals. Yes, the team of rivals. And who knew that they would be all the rivals of progressives? That's what progressives are feeling. Like, wow, a team of literally
You're
progressives
sounding like
fighting
a,
it.
Like
again.
An unhappy liberal.
You know, I'm not necessarily, I just wish there was more. If you're going to have a bunch of different voices, I really wish that was indeed the case.
CNN? They had all those different voices, but they all turned out to be middle of the road or conservative?
Well, I think that's kind of what it feels like. There are different voices, some altos, some sopranos, some from the right, some from the far right, some from the center right, some from, you know, way off in the distance. But, yeah, I think it feels bizarre, and I don't know the psychology of it. You know, I wonder how much when you are beaten up as Barack Obama for being, what's his experience? What does he know? What does he do? You know, just how does the human being compensate for showing that they're going to be in charge and they're going to hire people at, you know, on their team who have a lot of experience?
Well, I think that part of the problem for many liberals is something that I experience because Barack Obama has been on the show and John McCain was on the show and I liked both of them, although I'm did feel that Barack Obama spoke in paragraphs, which impressed me. He did come across as a person who had real ideas and real dreams, and he's obviously incredibly intelligent. Mm-hmm. Another politician I find incredibly intelligent is David Paterson. Both of them have been disappointments.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I just think when it comes...
I guess intelligence is not enough.
Right. And for me, my biggest hope for Barack Obama was that he would surround himself from viewpoints I vastly disagree with to viewpoints that I completely agree with, and that he was smart enough to say, I've heard all of you and I'm going to weigh all this out and then I'm going to make some choices because I'm in charge. And I just guess I feel like I don't hear a lot of varying viewpoints from him to work out a plan.
On the other hand, Liz, it may all work out very well and we may experience a renaissance in this country. Who knows?
Well, you know,
because predicting, this is the thing I have against pundits. They all go on television and they tell us what's going to happen, and then 2 weeks later something totally different
yeah.
happened, and they don't lose their jobs. If anything, they get a raise.
I know. You know, they're just like weathermen. It's crazy.
Now, weathermen are a lot more accurate than pundits.
It is indeed true. But it just feels so, and I don't even know what qualifies you as a pundit, actually. You know, sometimes you're just a lobbyist who then gets on TV, you know, and especially when you watch cable news. I love the shows that have those lawyers on, and they're lawyers, they're former prosecutors who are talking about a case with other former prosecutors, but none of them have worked on this particular case. So that is like punditry and pontification on some whole other level. And so I think we just, I mean, I guess punditry is silly, but it's fun.
So what are we predicting here? After all of that, what are we predicting? Rod Blagojevich, I saw in today's paper, he won't last past February. Well, what happens with that Senate seat if he's in there until February?
I think they might have to have a special election.
Which is going to cost a lot of money, and Illinois really might not be able to afford it. And the Democrats are upset about that because it should automatically go to a Democrat. After all, a Democrat is leaving the seat.
Well,
a Republican might win.
I agree. It just feels, he feels like, you know, I just feel like he feels like Kurtz from Apocalypse Now. You know, he's in the bunker. It's crazy. I've said before, he's...
But he has a lot of hair, and Marlon Brando had no hair.
See, the hair is the key, and this is what people aren't thinking about. You look at that hair, I think the roots of that hair are like that of a redwood, pressing down on the brain, not allowing him... He should sort of claim the roots in my hair defense, and they should get x-rays of the brain, and I think he could walk. It's just an idea.
It is the oddest haircut of any governor.
It's... insane. When you're a cross between Moe and Moe, like he just is like Moe from the Three Stooges. I don't know.
So tell me about your special inauguration theme shows at the Arlington Cinema in Draft House.
Well, what we're doing is we're bringing our morning show to the evening at the Arlington Cinema in Draft. And we're going to cover a lot of morning show topics and then cover a lot of special inauguration topics for the presentation. It'll be fun. We have a fake expert who's going to come on and talk about how the super rich are suffering through this economic crisis because they have now become merely rich, and there's some organizations who are there to help them, one of them being Doctors With Borders, who are a team of very dedicated plastic surgeons who will go from gated community to gated community and offer Botox and other services to those in need. So I think that's really important. So you'll be hearing about that. We'll be looking at Prop 8 with an expert who feels that the gay community's conversion tactics are becoming completely out of control and they're running the government. And we'll look at the gowns of those who will be attending the inauguration. So it'll be really fun. And then we also have our special, we have up-to-the-minute news breaks with our heavily buxomed news break girl with a lot of lip gloss who gives you the up-to-the-minute news.
And all of that can be accessed on wakeupworld.tv.
That's right. Tickets will go on sale tomorrow morning at wakeupworld.tv. You can get them through Brown Paper Tickets.
Liz Winstead, thank you so much for being with us today.
I love coming to your show.
I feel
it's
a lot better
great.
About 2008.
It's going to be a fun ride for sure.
If we can go through it again.
Yes. It'll be 2009 will be a fun ride. That's what I meant to say.